Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight we have another very interesting show dealing with metaphysics and science and spirituality and things like that. I thought it would be interesting tonight to talk about what's going on with our sun, because I've had several shows on this in the past, at least three come to mind in the last few years, and each time I will changing a little bit some of the things I've said because the sun is changing, and that's kind of what tonight's show is about, and how that fits in with certain esoteric realities, hidden realities, that are really more spiritual than they are purely scientific. Spirit meaning that it's really God's thought that is influencing some of the things that are taking place around us besides what we believe to be just material kind of issues. And I thought that it would be good to go over tonight because we just got done with what some people call the three festivals that are spiritual. Now, what is a spiritual festival? A spiritual festival is where people celebrate some type of the ways that God thinks. And those three ways have to do with, first, how we're going to sacrifice and create for the next year. And that's the first way. The second way is how we're going to love and give and understand for the next year. And then the final thing is, how are we going to produce and at the same time communicate and interact, take action for the next year? So those are the three festivals I'm referring to. There's names for them, but I don't want to get too deep into that. I think the important thing is to realize we just finished the last festival, and when you finish a festival, all it means is that your focus has been very intently on that, and you're celebrating the possibility that this thought is that you're focused on, the way of thinking, is going to go ahead and unwind for the rest of the year, which is a good time. And a year is the 12 months that move ahead from that period of time. So that's what these festivals are about. Now, how does that have to do with the sun? And how does it have to do with a lot of other things that are happening around us? Well, if you recall from the last several shows I did on this subject, which really began with the concept of, is there global warming and what is the cause and that sort of thing. And I went through in prior times some of the causes, and I said there's no question that we've elevated the amount of CO2 in the air, and it does cause global warming, but it doesn't do it as evenly over the planet as some people might suspect. And its changes and effects are mitigated sometimes. And more importantly, the sun really affects us, plus or minus about 4%+ in a swing over about a 22-year period and over hundreds of years of different kinds of cycles. So this is the bigger picture, because in reality, if CO2 goes up from 380, 385, about where it is, parts per million right now, to 500, all the way to 500, that might only be a 1.5% difference on a positive side. But it's consistent, but at least it would only be that much a change in the amount of energy that is being increasingly held into our planet's atmosphere and reflected back down to us in terms of infrared types of energy. Now, the crazy thing about this is that the sun is therefore three times, sometimes four times more effective than that in its effect on us. So, I mean, it's like you know, okay, well, maybe we're not looking at the right direction of things if we're concerned about any kind of climate change, because the sun seems to be the bigger picture and the bigger part of the puzzle. Not to say we shouldn't be concerned about any kind of thing we're due to change our planet and if it's going to be good or bad for the planet. But we'll get into that later in the show. All right, so let's talk about the sun. The sun. What is it? The sun is the source of virtually all the energy on Earth, with the exclusion of radioactive energy. So radioactive energies, and whether they come from outer space, and mostly they come from inside Earth, And we, of course, use these energies to make power sometimes in you know, nuclear power plants. So outside of that one source, the real source of energy as we experience it on Earth is coming from the sun. Now, people say, well, what about the wind? What about the tides? Aren't the tides caused by the moon and all this other stuff and whatever? Yeah, well, in actuality, there is a slight lunar effect on tides. That's true. But even that is much more affected by the wind, the waves, and other things. And even there's a solar tidal effect, not as strong as the moon's because the moon's much closer. But still, it's kind of a strange thing. When you add it all up, basically the sun is just about everything because the sun creates the wind. Yep, didn't know that, huh? And a lot of the wave energy that we think of as wave energy isn't from tides moving in and out. It's from waves moving across the ocean, which is caused by changes in temperature, called inversions, that produce winds, and that moves the water. And so everything we think of that is like, oh, well, that's another, you know, natural renewable resource, you know, that's just the sun in the sky. How about solar voltaics? You know, but same thing. How about solar heat energy plants? Same thing. Of course, it comes from the sun. So you see, the sun is the big deal. What about fossil fuels? Well, they were plants, and so in less cases, animals that grew from solar energy. And if the animals ate plants, the same thing would be true. So it's all coming from the sun. The sun is the big deal. And I guess we take it for granted because it comes up every morning and sets every evening and nobody bothers to think, well, that's a big deal. There's our energy. And there are other factors that do come into play as far as the sun is concerned, because if you block the sun, like with clouds, that's effectively eliminating a good deal of the energy that comes from the sun. But it also causes a greenhouse effect, which oddly may make a planet hotter, not colder. So it's kind of an opposite kind of thinking, right? Up to a point, if you block out the sun, the planet could become warmer, up to a point. But if the clouds are very thick and they don't go away at all, you could end up with a kind of nuclear, they call it, winter, in which the sun is so reflected from the outside of the clouds facing in outer space that almost no energy gets into the Earth, and it's like almost dusk all the time during the day, and at night, of course, it's night, meaning there's very little energy reaching us, and then, bingo, you got it. Freezing cold, no energy, and everything else that I was talking about kind of comes to a screeching halt. Okay, great. Now we got that understood. Now, what about this plus or minus 4+% that the sun goes in cycles about? Is it something that we really have to be concerned about? Well, when those cycles are happening, it's because of sunspots. What are sunspots? Well, the reason they look like darker areas, little spots on the sun, is because they have extremely high magnetic content, which tends to actually affect the light and causes them to run a little bit cooler, both. They use up some of their energy in their magnetic flux, and strangely, they even affect the light itself, making them look even darker than they actually are in temperature. They're not that much cooler, but the composite effect makes them look definitely darker, and we call them spots. You can see them move around the sun because the sun is rotating on its axis, just the way the Earth is. And these sunspots actually put out more energy, not less. They don't put it out in the visible light spectrum, though. They put it out in various kinds of higher frequency, sometimes particles, and out of the angstrom range, or the range that light, visible light, is seen. So they look darker to us, but they actually put out more energy, and they cause other energies coming out of the sun's corona and its certain parts of its atmosphere to get expelled towards us, which puts more energy coming at the Earth. Energy has an effect on our atmosphere. And the kind of energy that comes from the sun, from these sunspots, produces what we call ultraviolet kinds, high frequency light that we can't really see very, we can't see it. And when it hits our atmosphere, it changes through a fusion process, actually a chemical fusion process, not a nuclear, oxygen into ozone. Instead of O2, which is what we breathe, you get O3, which is not a good thing to breathe. And it floats around our atmosphere, and it does a lot of stuff up there. One of the things that it does is it keeps the atmosphere kind of, we'll say, very consistent. And instead of bobbing up and down and producing weird movements, it stays. It's kind of resistant to that effect. So the upper atmosphere becomes a little more, we'll say, consistent, a little more less erratic, and at the same time, more energy is transferred through the process. The ultraviolet radiation is eventually turned into heat, and the heat then heats up the Earth. So some of the energy that's expelled by the sun, some of the energy that's coming from the sunspots, makes our planet warmer. More sunspots, warmer weather. Got it? Okay. Other things happen too. The jet stream finds it a lot less likely to be wandering about and moving further south. It stays where we're more used to it being, and so the weather patterns are more consistent, and at the same time, we think them to be normal. You see, because we get used to it. Now, you take away some of the sunspots, and this happens in a certain cycle. I'll explain it to you. It's called the Hale cycle. But at any rate, if you take away some of the sunspots, suddenly everything reverses. You get more erratic weather. You're going to get more tornadic weather. That's what we're seeing right now. Cooler weather, because some of the jet streams are pushing colder air from the Arctic regions down into the places that are more temperate. In addition, less sunspots means less direct energy from the sun, because the ultraviolet radiation isn't hitting us. And sure enough, the atmosphere decreases in temperature, and it's not as buoyant because it's not heated as much, so it kind of sinks down. We actually have a shrinking, more dense atmosphere. It's a weird kind of thing. And, so all these things are going on at the same time, and consequently, we see cyclic weather effects. Normally, it happens in about 11 to 11 and a quarter year period of time, give or take. Not exact. And it's been pretty consistent for about 23 or 4 cycles of, give or take, 11 years on, 11 years off kind of cycles. That's good. I mean, we could say, cool, good consistency. We like consistency. You can plan and everything. But there's been times when it hasn't been that consistent. At the turn of the century, wasn't so consistent. And there was a time, if you go turn of the last century, not this century, and the 20th century, 19th to the 20th century, there was inconsistency. But if you go really back a few hundred years, there was a time when the sunspots virtually disappeared. No kidding. I mean, this is hard to imagine. For 70 years. 50 years completely. No sunspots. 10 years on either side, a little bit of activity. So when you look at it, that's a big difference. And during that time, it was a time called the Little Ice Age. What happened? Well, all the things that I'm talking about happened big time. And the temperatures around fell dramatically. Oh, 6 to 8 degrees in some places, but other places had as much as a 30-degree drop. Depends where you live because of that crazy thing with the jet stream moving around, the atmosphere changing. It just depended. If you were right where that jet stream was moving from the North Pole or almost up there, down to your area, and it was right in the middle of it, boy, you would say, it is freezing cold. And you'd never seen that before because it hadn't happened like that. And it takes a number of years for it to complete itself. So by the time, each year goes by, it's getting colder and colder and colder until, in this situation, the Thames River, the one that goes into London, became solid. And I'm not talking about solid, like, oh, gee, they had a bad day in December or something. I'm talking about, like, 4 or 5 months. I'm talking about, like, they had winter, what we call it spring, or even, early fall. That's bad news. because you can't plan on things. Crops don't work as well when it's very cold like that. The only thing that was a great fun for people who went out and sold their wares in what amounted to be like a whole new part of London. The river became physically a place you could just walk around, and you know, the ice was 3-4 feet thick. You didn't have to worry much about falling in or anything. Of course, that didn't do too much for having commerce and other issues that became into play. So, and this was like from, you know, we're talking 1645 to 1715, if you want to take the whole 7 years. That's a long time. That's a whole person's lifetime plus back in those days. Someone born, just imagine, you're born in 1645, okay. You're 5 years old and you're playing, you know, in the middle of March or April, you're out on the ice on the Thames. As far as you know, you live in an ice world, right? And you don't know anything else. And by the time you die, it's still like that in your average lifetime at that time. That's what was going on. Most of us have forgotten or didn't know about it. I mean, we weren't there probably, at least in this lifetime. And the point is that it is a remarkable change from what we think of as normal today. Yet this was just the cycle of the sun. Now, it hasn't done that since. But now, I've got news. But remember, I'm telling you about what I thought a year or two ago. And let's go back to time, to that time, and talk about it. A year or two ago, I was saying, you know, we're due for by the end of 2012, we're due for the sun to reach its solar maximus, and things can get really, really hot. And things can start being a problem, because we have this extra CO2 in our atmosphere, and I'm worried about that. But I also said, and if you listen to the shows, you'll hear me say that, that it would be a gift to us, and it's my understanding that gift is going to be to us, because by the last show I did on this, I said it's happening, that the sun is not going that way. By 2008, 2009, what was supposed to be happening, the heating up of the sun because of more solar sunspots, was not happening, at least not in any great amount. And I said, wouldn't this be great if it continues, because it would be helpful to have a decade or so, not much more than that. I'll explain why. Where the sun didn't go through its normal heating cycle, especially when we're so concerned about global warming and the effects of, as the temperature rises, the poles particularly become vulnerable. It isn't so much the temperate areas where most of us are alive, but the poles do, and especially the North Pole for reasons of geometry and the way the winds move and the way the energy moves around the planet. It melts first, and it is melting. Although I think that could be on its, we'll say, way out. It's going to change maybe back to the way it was. So it was melting, and people were predicting in another couple of years there will be just no ice there at all. But I don't know that that's going to happen. I doubt it is. Why? Because I suggested that there may be some intervention. Now, what is intervention? Well, intervention means coming from sources outside of humans' own endeavors and from, hopefully, God. There could be intervention from the dark side, too, but that's a whole different issue. They only can do things as we choose to be dark ourselves. But in terms of the God and light, intervention is happens all the time. We call them miracles, but they're really, they're just part of the spiritual planning of beings that are beyond our some understanding sometimes, and even worse yet, for some people, knowledge. So it is, I think, that event that we're dealing with. Because, lo and behold, as we'll say, the sun is losing all of its sunspotting at a time when it should be reaching its maximum level. I'm telling you, it's just literally going away. This hasn't been seen since 1645 or before. And believe it or not, they were looking at it back then. They didn't have the same instruments we have today, but they did do sunspot observations and counts starting from about 1600. And if you look at, you know, what was happening around 1635, 1640, that's where we are right now. What should have been the sun reaching its maximum level, solar maximus, it went the other way. And, I mean, in scientific terms, how does this happen? I can describe what happens, but not why. Why is a spiritual issue. What is not so hard to explain? The sunspots literally get sucked into the middle of the sun, and they are, we will say, frequency-ized back to a more normal state of frequency and more in phase with the way the sun, the rest of the sun is functioning. Or they're just held in limbo inside. Some of them are held in limbo, and they can float or be pushed back up. Others just seem to be changed back to the normal plasma that's part of the solar energy. So it's kind of an interesting thing to think about this, that the sun actually, if you thought of it as the body of a living being, that body is changing itself to better facilitate life here on Earth at this particular time. And yes, there's going to be some consequences that are negative, but we might say that it's probably a positive thing more than negative. Unless you think about the tornadoes and other things that are hitting us. But those are pinpointing to where people are more than they are not. And that's a more human thing. It's the immediate consciousness of the humans living in that country, which in this case is the United States, that kind of pulls it in. And sometimes it's also the nature of the government of that country. That's a whole other program, right? Okay, but in the meantime, we at this time are somewhat fortunate, but our fortune, as I talked about in the last two shows on this subject, is limited. You don't want to go more than past 2020 with this model. If we go as far as 2070, say, or 2065 even, the results could be devastating, and for this reason. Besides the planet getting cooler, that's not such a big deal. And we can adjust for various things that may cause problems, including there will be some slowdown in some crops in some areas. But at the same time, the areas that do have crops growing may grow better because there won't, there'll be more rain and there'll be less drought and less desertification, which is a very dangerous problem. So those are good things. The bad thing is cosmic rays. Remember I said that the sun expels a wind, kind of a bunch of charged particles, mostly protons, towards the Earth, and this wind pushes away all the really dangerous cosmic rays coming from the galaxy all around us. Those cosmic rays are the magnetic field of Earth can deal with in a very slight way. We need the solar wind to really push them away and towards the outer skirts of the solar system. Without the solar wind, and as the sun loses its magnetic, we'll call them spots, the result is that these cosmic rays hit the Earth much more and much more directly. And when they do that, they cause a lot more genetic changes, sometimes cancers. Sometimes it could just literally kill something, depending upon how many and where and when. So we have to contend with that. The danger is multiplied by exposure. So 10 years isn't so bad, 20 is moderate, 30 is getting into the nasty area, and 40 years is really problematic. And for reasons that I believe prove my point, you seldom see the sun go away for much more than that in any strong effect because it's a life extinguishing effect for Earth for hundreds of years, say, if the sun did not have these solar spots. So someone's looking after us. But right now, the wiser move is to do what I suggested the last time I spoke about this subject. Maybe we should all pray that there are some reduction in solar spots for the next decade or so. That was how I ended that program. And today we can see the results. I'm not saying, oh, because I told everybody to pray, that's why it worked. No, I'm saying it worked because there is a spiritual principle behind what's taking place, and it is following a very benevolent course at the present time. what is the other benefit of this wind not coming towards Earth? Well, our satellites are extremely bad targets. And even a moderate solar wind knocks out some of them. A bad one will knock out almost all of them. And it would really change the way of life on Earth for a decade or longer, until we put new ones up, because it would destroy them in most cases. So this is a big deal. And the fact that it's going away gives us more time to build smarter satellites, because they only stay up like 20 years or so, and then they kind of decay in orbit, or they get enough cosmic radiation that they die as well. So there's only so much we can do to keep them going. And we will get better at protecting them from solar wind, or we'll invent some other way of communicating than just having a bunch of junk in space going around the Earth. Thousands and thousands and thousands of pieces of junk and satellites together. So this is a good time. It's very propitious for us to have this taking place right now. And now I know some people are going to say, well, that's not very nice that you're saying this, because we are big on global warming and now you're going to affect that. Well, global warming is mostly being used for political goals, not for goodness. And when I say that, I don't mean to disparage the fact that, yeah, there's some global warming, if you want to call it, from the CO2, but it's being more than offset by the sun. So to me, that's a nonsense issue. The bottom line is, what is happening to the climate of Earth? It's getting cooler right now, and it may remain so for decades to come. Our concern should not be about global warming or even global change, climate change, because that's something we can't control, and it's going to constantly change from that anyway. What we need to do is to improve our technology in a more virtuous way, not a better technology in the sense of just strictly technology, but a better technology that improves Earth in all the ways that it needs to be improved, not just because it makes more money for somebody or it's a better this or that. Because overall, it increases the intelligent activity of all life. That's what we want. On Earth, it increases the intelligent activity of all life. At present, because the third ray is moving on the way out, that's been declining. We have more technology, but it decreases. Decreases does not increase the intelligent activity of life. It makes life less intelligent. That's a bad thing. So we want to reverse that. And we have an opportunity to, because we're being given some, we'll say, breathing room, I think, with the sun effect. Now, does that mean that everything is hunky-dory? No. It means that human beings are still creating tremendous crises and problems for themselves. Remember I mentioned the tornadoes. Why are so many people dying from tornadoes? Well, besides the fact we have more tornadoes because there's less sunspots and the Earth's cooling off. That sounds weird, I know. Well, I thought hotter weather produces tornadoes. Now, hotter weather produces more consistent atmosphere. Remember I mentioned that? Colder weather produces this inconsistency in atmosphere with the jet streams moving around different and everything changes. It results are erratic weather that produces much more severe thunderstorms and worse tornadic problems. Now, it is true, hotter weather will produce hotter weather. Hotter atmospheric temperatures will produce worse hurricanes. So hurricanes get worse when tornadoes go the opposite way. In some circumstances, if it is sun-created, there are other things that create these effects, though, than just the sun. Okay, so here we are, looking at this whole situation. I realize talking about weather is so complicated, it's hard to follow this, right? There's too many variables. If we're going to understand human situations, we have to look at how humans affect energy around them. And humans are selfish and non-spiritual. They attract dark energy to themselves and around themselves. A country does this, especially if it's done at the, we'll say, national level with the government. It tends to create more crises in that country, and bad things happen. It's not like punishment. It's karma. It's bad effects following bad thinking and bad doing. That's what happens. Really. So we shouldn't be so surprised that we're having some problems. And since humans are far from perfect, they have this effect on themselves all the time. The more humans adversely affect themselves directly by their negative thinking, the less we have global events, which are terrible. So global events can actually decrease because it doesn't build up everywhere on the planet. It's focused around where the individual groups of humans are thinking selfishly. And it's kind of like a release valve. It allows some of the negative energy to be used up for terrible things there, but it doesn't build up to even bigger levels that can become an international, worldwide catastrophe. Like the tsunami that happened in 2004. That was a biggie. Now, that was a more global catastrophe, affected many nations, and 250,000 people or more died. That's a big event. All right. Now, could the sun produce those kinds of things? Sure. If we had a solar maximus that lasted as long as some of these solar minimuses last, in the present day, that could be an existential event. Let's say the sun, the number of sunspots, instead of going back to the normal solar maximus, the maximum number of normal sunspots, goes up 5 or 6 times. That's quite a bit. What would happen? Well, we would see energy readings going up 20-30% higher in some parts of the Earth. That's a huge amount. Now you're talking, this is a big, big, big time. And if it, I'm saying if it lasted for as long as these solar minimus periods have lasted, 50 to 70 years, we could see changes in temperatures of 30, 40 degrees. We would not be able to survive. That would kill us all. It would kill most other life on the planet off. Even cockroaches would have a hard time living under that basis. So in some places, literally, that hit in the summertime, say 120 degrees, where I'm at, you can get almost that high in the average summer, we could see temperatures in the 150 and 60 range. Oh, that would be terrible. That would be more than just about anybody could tolerate. And it would just about kill everything. So that would be a nightmare that we wouldn't want to even think about. And we would therefore have winters over 100 degrees Fahrenheit. That's if we had the solar maximus go for this maximum period of time to go into 50, 60, 70 years. That would be a terrible, terrible effect and outcome. No one would want that to take place. Also, commensurately, if you have anywhere near that kind of solar maximus, let's just say it only happened for a few years, but it went up 4, 5, 6 times, the amount of solar flares in these, the winds coming off the sun and other things would go up the same proportion of amount. It would knock all our satellites out of the sky. It would make danger even to fly in a jet at 40,000 feet. Things would become really nasty all over the darn place. And we would find ourselves in a living nightmare just from a few years. It wouldn't go up 30 or 40 degrees in a few years. It would take 40 years or 50 years. But it might go up a couple degrees, a few degrees, but those solar winds and all those particles coming at us could be very devastating. Our magnetic field cannot handle it, and that's another problem. The Earth's magnetic field has been weakening by a considerable amount, about 1% a year on an average. It's a lot. That's a huge amount. That means in another 100 years, if it continues the way it did the last 10 years, we could see the Earth's magnetic field disappear. That keeps all these nasty particles from hitting you. Gives us a great aurora borealis in certain locations, but it doesn't. This is not happening in your backyard. And it also keeps the cosmic rays from coming in. So this is another factor that is one of these big issues that's just happening in relationship between the sun and the Earth. I'm going to predict something, that there's a relationship between the Earth's magnetic field and what's happening inside the Earth, and to some degree, it's happening on the sun and inside the sun. Now, nobody's proven this yet, but I'm predicting that they're going to find some relationship because we are connected. And if we're connected, that would mean that there are effects that can be found and will be found at some point in the future. I mean, that isn't a good idea. All right, so looking at this whole process and where we're at the present time, this leaves us with a conclusion, as far as I'm concerned, at least in this first part of the show, in dealing about our sun. We need to look at the sun as something far more than just, whoa, it's up in the morning and goes down at night, and besides that, it does go through some quirky kinds of gyrations, etc. The better way to look at the sun is as our guide, our friend, the life-giving energy that this planet needs, and something that we should study in many different respects, not just the way we study it today, and possibly from the spiritual side, although that's hard for many, many scientists to consider. And so we need to really have a much better, we'll say, awareness and understanding of this star that is the reason we exist. If there were no sun, there would certainly be no Earth. Further, the Earth came as a result of the formation of the sun in the first place. The gravitational field that brought together the parts of the Earth in a couple different occasions and then through many, many impacts with other fragments of various asteroids, comets, etc. That all came about because the sun exists and has gravity. A tremendous gravitational well was produced that the Earth just started to develop its own well around as it got bigger and bigger. And, of course, the two wells interact with each other on a continuous basis. In a quantum physical sense, the two gravitational fields are, in effect, affecting each other. And all the particles that are on Earth are, in one way or another, affected by the particles that are on the sun. So if the sun has fewer magnetic fields, there is a reason for it that is in relationship to the way that the Earth is reacting. If humans and Earth are creating a lot of negative energy, it has an effect on the sun. And again, these are two bodies of beings that have consciousness, in my opinion. And this is all part of God's plan, that everything is interconnected. All parts of what we call life in some way affect all other parts. And that's one way to take a look at how this process is taking place. Now, if you're really a staunch, logical, positive type of person, meaning that you think there's only physical things in the world, then it's going to be difficult for you to accept what I just said. But even if you don't accept it on a spiritual basis, I think there's a good scientific, although not proven, probability, based upon quantum physics, quantum field theory, and gravitational fields, to prove my point that the Earth and the sun are intimately connected. Now, a lot of people say, well, isn't Jupiter more connected because it's so much bigger and all this other stuff? Yeah, it's a lot further away. The Earth is in the sweet spot where life is easiest to grow as we understand it, and it is in the place where it has a very dramatic effect on a part of the sun that is called the belts or jet streams internal or currents internal to the sun. And we are having a direct effect on that. Why? Because we're at the right angle to the sun in terms of the distance between the sun's north and south poles, which reverse every 22 years, by the way. And we are affecting that, while the sun is affecting our magnetic poles at the same time. It's like a dance going on, if you could imagine it. On one side is the Earth dancing, and then it's doing its thing, and it's being affected by human thought, etc. And then on the other side, the sun's doing its thing, and these two are kind of like in a wonderful dance together, with the sun being a million times a stronger effector on the Earth and vice versa, but weird as it seems, the sun doesn't need nearly as much an effect on it to have a big effect on Earth because we only rely on the same proportion, about a millionth, of the sun's energy that we actually have an effect on. So it balances out to be completely consistent logically that the Earth and the sun are actually in a kind of mutual dance together, at least in terms of how the Earth is affected by it. It's a fascinating idea. Well, listen, we are out of time for this segment. And when we come back, I want to talk about how this may lay out in more realistic terms in the future for us, what we can expect, and how we should probably make plans for the total change that, if this continues, and I actually am praying that it will, we might be able to change ourselves to be more in tune in that dance with our great, we'll say, being beyond us, the sun, and its being that is its spiritual force. Okay, we'll be back in about 2.5 minutes from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is. I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight we're talking about scientific and esoteric issues about the sun. I thought it would be good to go over some of the things I've covered in several prior shows over the last, number of years, and bring us up to date to what's going on today. Now, what is happening today is of such profound change that we have to really kind of make ourselves open to a completely different plan for our future. At the present time, it appears, but it's not certain, that the sun is cooling off in a dramatic way, similar to what happened in the years from 1645 to 1715 throughout the entire world. And at that time, we went into what is called the mini ice age. There were other conditions that may have added to the effects of that time, but the sun's effect was dramatic. And we literally cooled the whole planet down. Anywhere from 6 to probably 10 degrees on average in some places. Other places went down as much as 30 degrees if you lived around where jet streams were moving in strange ways and other things took place. That would have been very, very cold. And that's at the end of this particular period when it reached its coldest time. Okay, so what does all this mean? Today we are in a kind of reactive and politically correct but politically wrong period in which we believe that what we have to be concerned about is global warming and the fact that we're putting all the CO2 into the atmosphere and some other gases as well. Some that are much worse, like methane, which is 23 times worse than CO2. And what these do is they create a greenhouse effect. They heat up our planet. So people have been very concerned about this heating up effect. And around the end of the 1990s to about 2000, people were saying, see, it's been going up, you know, it's going up, 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 up. Some of it was exaggerated by false number crunchings and other things and graphing in strange ways. They call it the fake hockey puck now, the falsified hockey puck, because it kind of looked like a hockey puck suddenly. Temperatures are going up so fast. But the truth is that there was some global warming. It's just not as extreme as what it was. And since that time, it looks like we're moving into a period of extreme, possibly, global cooling. Now, what should we be doing about this? Well, here's some thoughts, and I'm just going to throw them out. The first is we're not absolutely positive that this thing is really happening. So we don't want to bet everything on it. You know, like, oh, yeah, it's going to be so cold, we better, you know, burn down all the trees. We better make everything, you know, let's do everything we can. Heat up the planet and put a lot of CO2 up in the atmosphere, and maybe that will help us. I think that would be an extremely overreaction and most likely not a good gamble for a number of reasons, besides just that the sun could change. We may not have the effect we're really thinking we're going to have. So rather, what I'm suggesting is that we do the following, that each year that goes by, we reduce the need to reduce CO2. Not by a lot, just maybe a few percent a year. We don't enforce the need to reduce CO2, methane, and certain other kinds of gases that are mostly causing greenhouse effect. But you do it progressively. You take account of how much UV is hitting the upper atmosphere, how much sun spots there are, and how much little there are. And we have new ways of measuring the effects of the sunspots, and as those go online, there's a couple new ones that are going to be online in the next year or two. That will help us to then determine how much we should or shouldn't, for that year, say, institute more CO2 restrictions, sequestering, or not worry about it. Just tell people, don't worry about that, never mind. Because we have to be able to create a trend ourselves that's in trend with the sun. As I ended the last segment, we need to do the dance with the sun, and the sun is the leading partner. Okay? So it's our partner, but it's the leading partner. We're not controlling it, not entirely. But let me say something. If we're really going to get in tune with this, it would help for us to become more metaphysical about this, rather than in spiritual, rather than just look at it in scientific terms. If we see the planet turning more and more evil and dark, that's bad news. And it also means the sun is going to probably swing more in the opposite direction. So we need to be able to account for these things, and that's a tough problem. Because we don't really have theocracies very much, and most people aren't going to buy into it. So it's, but I'm just saying, in an ideal world, you would be looking at that as a real concern, a real issue. And you can actually make plans for it, but I think it may be a pipe dream. And maybe at some time in the distant future, we're going to see anything like that. So in the meantime, let's play it more by the physical, material side, as best as we can within that model. What else can we do? Well, we need to prepare for a time when the sun's going to come back out of this thing. If it is 50 years from now, we've got a lot of time, but the most important thing is we're going to need resources. Some of those resources come from the strength of our own economic positions. As you know, the world's a mess in economics. What's going on in Greece this week, terrible stuff. Socialism is a failed method for most countries to function, especially any country with much over 1 million people. it's just not a good model for big countries, central planning, and it involves others determining what is the natural ability for people to be free or not free. And instead, you lose freedom, and you gain a lot of rigidity and the inability to grow and be creative. Creativity goes right out the door because enterprise is destroyed in the process, free enterprise. So we have this happening not coincidentally in countries that are highly socialized. We, as a country, the United States, is moving in a direction of socialism. That's very bad because it's going to produce the same kind of effects. I'm suggesting that we enhance or increase our economics right now during this time when it won't adversely affect the world from a standpoint of increasing, quote-unquote, climate change or global warming, because the sun is in this remissive period. This is a very good time for us to be considering the weird things that everybody who's on the right side of things says, drill, baby, drill, lots of free-flowing oil and gas and all this stuff. It actually makes sense to use the fossil fuels we have today, but not things that are going to create poisons and pollutants besides just CO2 and methane. Methane's not good to breathe, by the way, but it generally goes in the upper atmosphere. I'm talking about things that have a high sulfur content, produce sulfuric acid like coal, that are dirty and produce all kinds of other kinds of pollutants, and nitrous oxides, which can produce nitric acids. I mean, you've got all kinds of terrible things that we can still do. We should be working on cleaning up our outputs, exhaust, waste of things, but only at the ability to increase the economy at the same time, not putting it on as a tax or a destructive element to the economy, because we need the economy to be able to make those changes. So you can do both. You make all fossil fuels incredibly abundant. Incredibly, I mean, just take the taxes off, just allow people to use them as they need to, while this global cooling is taking place. But at the same time, you also put on restrictions on things like smokestacks and other things from electric power plants. Most of them are pretty dirty. And you're going to elevate the cost that way, but it will be offset by the ability for people to freely use it and to build the economy. So you'll have kind of a neutral cost factor. So the cost-benefit ratio turns out to be exactly neutral and allows people to stay at or above the standard of living they're at while they decrease a major amounts of pollution. And over time, once they get these things in place, then the costs don't keep going up, and the economy will grow. As it grows, we're able then to make new kinds of satellites, find new ways to harness solar energies, including wind and wave, which really are the sun in other ways. And we learn how to be more responsible with nuclear energy so that we are using it in ways in which just because there's an 8.3 earthquake instead of an 8.2, we don't lose a million people, you know? I mean, we have to be a bit more intelligent about how we build these things. Okay, so the cost will be 30% higher, but it'll withstand an earthquake up to 10, of which there virtually are none. So now you're at a point where you've got a really safe thing going on. 30% isn't such a bad number to save millions of people's lives, right? Okay, so you look at it from that standpoint, and you use these things, and then for waste, you allow places that are safe, relatively safe, to put the waste in. You know, if you think that it's a mountain in Nevada is a safe enough place, you use them. You need to use them, because if you don't use them, then you just have them sitting around in terrible places like next to the power plant, which is that's a lot worse place to have it. And so, you know, there's a lot of things we can do right now while we have this lull in the situation. I'm not suggesting that this is going to last, because remember, we're going to do this on an annual basis in my plan, okay? And this annual basis is we make assessments. And I'm talking about on a national scale. You can't do this with individuals. But each nation does this, hopefully, somewhat in sync with other nations, but they don't have to all do it the same. And they do it based upon what they find is the changes in the sun. If the sun is still moving cooler and cooler, we got more and more time, and we make plans for the cold effects. Also, we have to simultaneously, because the sun is moving cooler, we're going to have less desertification, food prices could drop, we would be able to eventually grow more food, although we have to do it in somewhat different areas, and the overall economy will be better, but we'll have to put more money into building in some areas, stronger houses to withstand tornadoes and have tornado shelters and better ways of alerting people half hour before a tornado hits that it's coming. We can do this. We just don't put the time or money into making it that way. Everybody says, oh, we're not scientifically equipped to be able to predict tornadoes. We are. There are ways of doing it. It's just costly. And the technology has not been developed to do it because most people say, well, who's going to buy it? Who's going to put it in? So if we are affluent enough, we can do this. And if we're planning for it because things are going to get cooler. The good news is that there will be less hurricanes, and they're more difficult to deal with. I went into some of the ways to deal with hurricanes before, and those are quite costly, much more so than dealing with tornadoes. And you can't do them so locally or so focused. You have to deal with wide areas of the planet to deal with hurricanes. So in a way, this isn't a bad thing to have things cooling off, because the hurricanes come from the amount of heat energy in the ocean. And when the sun gets cooler, the heat energy drops. Good news. That means the hurricanes can come on. Even with the CO2 levels rising, remember, the sun is many, many times effective on the change in temperature in the oceans than the CO2 levels are year to year, or even decade to decade. All right, so this is a big deal. And we can really make a difference if we just start planning now. What about this drill here, drill now, drill yesterday kind of thing? Yep, we should do it. Why should we do it? Because as long as we are doing it in ways in which the amount of quote-unquote spilling of oil if it's offshore is reduced, and we also have better methods, which we didn't even employ this last spill, to control these things if there is a terrible accident. But the point is, the reason we want to do it is because geopolitically, we are in a position right now where we can detach from feeding the coffers of those that are against God. Remember what I said earlier, that if we continue to become a dark planet, an evil planet, more bad things are going to happen anyway, because we're bringing the negative energy in. It'll force the sun to do other crazy stuff that may go too radical in one way or another. So we need to stop some of the feeding of the coffers of evil. And we know where those coffers are. They're mostly in places that we don't think very highly of. I don't care if it's Hugo Chavez in Venezuela or if it's the Arabian princes and kings in Saudi Arabia and other places. Those people are not working in the interest of our country, nor are they working in the interest of God or the world, in my opinion. Now, maybe for their opinion of God, which says their God says, go kill everybody that doesn't believe in our God. Well, the God I'm familiar with says, love people and at the same time accept other people's religions as their method of communicating with a higher being. That's okay. All right, they use a different phone, that's all. But they're not using the right phone if they're out to kill people. That isn't a phone to God, and I can tell you that. They may think it is. They may call it jihad, but that's not it at all. It's called hell and the devil, or whatever you want to call it. Hell and evil. That's what it is. Okay, so you're looking at the thing from that standpoint now. If we drill baby drill, and I want to talk about how much we actually have, and use all of our natural resources, including coal. Remember, we're going to take that coal, and we're going to make it a lot cleaner over 5 or 10 years, but to put some money into that so that we don't have as much of a problem. We don't have to worry about sequestering CO2, which is very expensive, but just cleaning up the smokestacks, we should be doing. And a lot of our older power stations are pretty dirty. They never did much cleaning up of those things. Okay, so if we use these natural resources, we can eliminate, 100% eliminate our reliance on foreign oil, which is a biggie. And you say, well, wait a second. I thought we can't produce enough oil to replace all the foreign oil. Is it 60-30 or 60-40 or 70-30 or whatever? No, that's not true. First of all, that's a lie. There's I know the political party, the Democrats, they claim we only have 2%, 3%. I think I'm with these numbers all the time, of all our needs in oil. That's not true. We have, in terms of energy needs, we have about 50% of our energy oil needs presently. That includes known reserves that are offshore, and it includes the newly made viable, financially viable sands in some of the states, oil sands, that we have recently discovered. 50% at the present time could be fulfilled from that. Now, we can knock off another 20% by converting trucks and certain other industries to gas, because we have hundreds of years, because we've discovered a lot more gas deeper in the earth, hundreds of years of gas, natural gas. So, and that's methane. So we got all this stuff going on. That's cool. And we've got, and that, now you add that, that's now we're within the 30% range. That's pretty darn good. Okay, now what about that remaining 30%? It has been estimated that if we started checking all the places that we presently haven't checked, we're going to be way over that. Way over that, because we've just discovered ways to get to oil offshore and other places that we never could reach before, so they weren't considered reserves. And then those places have not been explored enough to know exactly how much is there, but we're very close to being independent right today. Today, at least in the sense that if we started developing it within 5 or 10 years, we wouldn't be buying anything from anybody. We could even technically be selling it. Now, be aware that most of our foreign oil comes from Canada and Mexico. Mexico's got its problems, but it still doesn't have very many radical Islamists running around. And that's good, because at least it's staying pretty close to us. But it's the 20 or 30% that's going overseas, and into, when I say overseas, I'm including places like Venezuela. And those that's where our money is going to bad, going to evil. And that's what I'm concerned about us stopping. That's what I'm concerned about us trying to make a change in. So that's where we have to hit first. I would consider it's okay to keep buying from Canada and Mexico. But the main thing is to stop it from foreign sources that are evil, that are really dark. That's what, and if we stop that, what happens is those people weaken. They will fall into an economic kind of stifling. And then if we have extra oil, we can sell it ourselves on the market and reduce other people from buying from those same sources. You see what I'm saying? It's sort of like an economic war, in a sense. And we could win that war. If we win the economic war against the radical, we'll call it Islamists and other people in that vein, if we win that war, we weaken them tremendously. Doesn't mean we ultimately win the whole war. The whole war is based upon believing in a God that's righteous rather than one that's a terrorist and crazy. So that's how you win the war, is which God you believe in, really. When it's about God, and that's what they claim it's about, I don't think so, but I think it's about their own temperament and frustrations in existence and possibly a misunderstood idea about capitalism. But regardless, we can make a change and weaken them to the point where it's going to be very difficult. Right now, every dollar we send over to these folks could be going into some kind of nuclear weapon to blow us up next year. That's a bad outcome. Wouldn't you agree? So this sun thing has a much bigger, bigger, bigger picture. The effect is going to be huge if we use it properly. Now, I don't know if anybody's going to really listen to me in this government, but, I mean, this is a great plan. All you got to do is you use it on an annual basis to see, and you don't predict beyond 1 year because you don't want it to suddenly turn around on you. But you're committed enough so that as each year goes by, you become more and more prosperous, you decrease the prosperity and ability for your enemies to hurt you and destroy you, and for the enemies of God, I would say. And you become much more consistently conservative in terms of conservation. I'm going to get to that next. But this is the reason, this is the reason this solar thing is really a great idea, because it gives us time and money. Time and money, money is compressed time. So compressed time and energy, excuse me. And so we have a lot more energy when we have a lot more time. It allows us to be able to use energy more effectively and to compress it better, because we're going to also therefore have more money. That's what I'm describing to you, right, in this segment. So this is a fascinating idea if you think about it. Where does that lead us, then, in terms of our future? Well, I'm going to give you a little bit of a rest at this point. I'll come back to that point, and we'll keep talking about it. But this, I hope it's a positive show for a lot of people. Some people say, sometimes you tell us things we can't deal with, and I don't know what it is. I try to always give some kind of tangible thing people can do. And hopefully today will be even more so that way. Okay, let me just tell you that if you haven't tried it, you should try Phi Chi Jizuk. And it's spelled Phyqigesic. Some people thought it was the chi like chi. We used, and when I say we, I was a consultant in the company. I'm not the owner of the company, but I'm a consultant. I'm a person who helped to devise this. And the idea here was to try to produce something that would be in accord with Eastern medicine. And QI is really the Eastern, and particularly the Chinese spelling, of the energy of life, which is qi. What does Phi Chi Jizuk do? It helps to reduce pain significantly in most people by redirecting energies that are stuck in a place where they shouldn't be, and that causes the other energies that communicate with us about these energies, we sometimes refer to them as the nadir system, which is the electromagnetic equivalent of our nervous system. So think of it as sort of an esoteric nervous system. It tells us what's going on. It says, hey, it hurts. It hurts because the energy that keeps us alive is presently stuck here and causing us to be sick and eventually causing us to die. That's a terrible thing. Phi Chi Jizuk helps move this energy to places where energy is needed and away from the places where it's clogged and causing problems. It allows the demonic energies to recover that tell us that we're in pain. And narcotics do the opposite. It puts those energies to sleep, and then when they come back out of their sleep, they are even more emphatic, so there's even more pain because their way of communicating with us is, ouch, it hurts. Phi Chi Jizuk stops that whole syndrome for most people who use it. And you don't use it like normal, that people use analgesics. Because Phi Chi Jizuk is an analgesic, but not a normal kind. What it does is that it has to move the energy, and there's a thing called in physics momentum. And you got to get the energy moving by using a lot of energy to begin with, and then smaller and smaller amounts as time goes by. So you start off taking a lot more Phi Chi Jizuk than you would have any other analgesic, I mean the first couple times. And then you are reducing it each time, until you get down to levels where you might be taking no more than you would any other analgesic. But the point is that you're also solving the problem. The pain doesn't return because you've rebalanced the qi energy in your body. And until you do something to unbalance it, which is usually selfish thinking and more likely behaviors, you're in good shape. Phi Chi Jizuk is a great, great answer for many people as an analgesic. And you can get it by going to buyjizuk.com on the internet. Buyjizuk.com, that's it. Or if you call this phone number, 602-431-5762. And give it a try. It's guaranteed. If it doesn't work, the folks who make it will give you your money back. And that's guaranteed. So if you, for any reason, say, you know, this stuff really didn't work for me the way I wanted it to, it's not up to your satisfaction, not somebody else's, get your money back. So what have you got to lose? Try it out and see how it works. Most people find that it's very helpful. But remember to use a lot to begin with and then cut it down gradually. Don't just take two or three and say, oh, it didn't work. Because two or three barely works on almost anything. But four or five certainly does. Six to eight almost always does. If you take 10, it'll knock out almost everything except for the most extreme kinds of terrible pains, including migraines. And then you might have to go like a couple more. You should talk to a healthcare provider if you're going to go really high on this stuff. Not because it's dangerous, but just because it's getting in areas where you start changing small elements, small parts of how your body functions. Anytime you take a lot of anything, you always want to be careful. Vichijizik. Great stuff. Okay, let's come back now. Let's talk about this this esoteric reality of changing our way of life, so to speak, and getting rid of some of the evil on the planet at the same time, improving our standard of living significantly, all by making some changes that kind of match what's going on with the sun. Now you can say, well, how can you do this if you've got a 20-year plan or a 30-year plan? Where every year you're going to evaluate. The amount that you put into it changes. That's all. Nothing else changes. Nothing. So each year your goals change only if the sun seems to be going in the other direction or is it slowed down or whatever. But I don't think that's going to be a problem because it doesn't look like that. The odds are much stronger that it's going to be pretty consistent for maybe a couple decades or longer. That gives us a great opportunity, a tremendous opportunity. Use natural gas in trucks and many other methods. Change over some really old power plants that aren't even worth retrofitting anything to and make them gas plants. And most of the other power plants, just clean them up. Use catalytic issues and ways of changing so that we get something back out of the process, but at the same time, you really get a cleaner burning power plant. Electricity could drop dramatically in this process. A lot. A lot. And think about this. In the long run, if our economy, say, elevates in GDP by 1% to 2% more per year because we're doing this, within about 10 years, we may be able to pay off things like our national debt. And we may be able to change the very nature of the present economy of the world. And maybe we can convince people that capitalism is a much better system than socialism for almost everybody. It's a really better way. And it's way better than the socialist doctrine under a communist system, slightly different. It's more severe. The point is here that redistribution of wealth is the destruction of everybody. It's not the only people who benefit from it are the wealthiest. I know that sounds weird. It sounds always like, oh, well, the wealthiest are going to take all the money from. Almost all the time in societies that want to redistribute wealth, the behind-the-scenes players, the ones that are running the government, running all the systems, are the wealthiest. They just get rid of the middle class and everybody becomes poor. That's what redistribution of wealth is about. For real. Look it up in the history books. Okay, so how do we effectively deal with that if that's true? Well, here's an interesting point. The plan that I'm suggesting about developing our own resources and at the same time using all parts of energy at the same time will increase the amount of labor force by 4 to 5%. Well, if we're at 9.1% here in the United States, and some places I know across the oceans are at 15%, but whatever, you know, if you go to Ireland or whatever, I mean, if you take off 4% from 9.1, that's 5.1. We're back to pretty much normal. And if you go down to 5%, we're back to the best days of Reaganomics and other times when we have really good growth. That's 4% unemployment. Those are amazing numbers, and we can do this within 6 months to a year if we do the things that I suggest. I also suggest the following. As in this process, over 5 years or so, gasoline prices will be cut down to about a third of where they are today. I know that's hard to believe. You say, a third? Well, think of it. A little over a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, they were half. So it's not that hard to imagine. I'm talking a buck and a quarter in today's money to a buck 50. Gas is what gas is going to cost. I believe if gas goes to that level, you know me, I'm not in favor of taxation, but I would say it's okay then to produce a tax on the gas, if you want to call it that, that goes to private industry as a means of, think of it as this, as a loan to small businesses and even large businesses under certain circumstances to find alternative methods of creating energy at the same time. Because while we are probably okay for hundreds of years in terms of fossil fuels, we're probably only good for 50 or 60, maybe 75 years of oil, which is an important part of our fuel structure. And we should be trying to go to alternative energy just from the standpoint that it's an infinite supply and we never have to worry about it again. It comes straight from our sun and much more directly than going through carbon products, which produces a lot of wasteful issues and dangerous byproducts. We're still going to have dead plants over time, and we'll still be making coal on our planet. It's not like that's going to go away either, and someday the oil fields will refill. But in the meantime, we could eventually shift over. But the price of gasoline, if it's $1.50 a gallon in today's money, we would be booming like crazy at 4 or 5% unemployment. And we would pull the entire world out of a recession and maybe convince a lot of crazy countries that socialism is not the answer, nor is communism, and nor is anti-God. Because if you have a totally secular mentality, the result is that ultimately you believe that all things come from humans or from man rather than from man's creator. And eventually you become a slave to government and to your own greed and to your own misunderstanding of almost everything around you in the universe. So you're doomed, is what I'm saying. That's why you can't win a war against people who want to fight you because of their belief in God without you having a stronger one yourself. All right, so we have this tremendous opportunity to change around a huge part of what I call the third-rate issues in our country that are really going against us. I'm going to cover more of these in a few minutes, but the third-rate issues in our country, and to do so in a much more effective, efficient way, because the sun is going cool. Yeah, I mean, you thought it was going to be a real simple program. Finally, I can listen to this guy. It's not going to be complicated at all. He's going to talk about the sun getting cooler. That's what you thought, right? No. You know me. I'm not going to just leave it there. I'm going into the consequences of this event if we were to take it to its reasonable outcomes and we take charge of the situation and are creative about it. I hope there's people out there listening to me. Can you hear me? Yeah, right. Okay. What else is there involved? Now, remember, I mentioned at the beginning of the show about the third ray going out, and it's crystallized, and we have problems. What else can we do to make things better? Because all this stuff about energy is really about the third ray. That's what we're really talking about. And so the other thing we need to be considering here is technology itself. We need to, let's assume that we're going to raise our standard of living substantially by doing the things I just said in the last 5 or 10 minutes. That's going to give us capital. And capital is what we need tremendously, but capital with the right motive. The capital just to make inventions and to create small businesses and for people to have enterprise is only good when it is accompanied by spiritual capital, by the ability to want to and follow through in the creation and co-creation with our Creator, with God. That's it. That's, if we don't do that, and we go in the other direction, which would be considered greed, the results will be disastrous. You might say, well, why wouldn't it be just half disastrous? Because after all, you already said it's a good thing if we become more capitalistic. Yeah, but capitalism, or any ism, without God, is eventually self-destructive and destructive of others at the same time. It becomes evil over time. So we do need to have the foundation on both sides. We have to use what is coming in, replacing some of this third-rate fixation we've had for 675 years or so. And we need to replace it with this, the more fourth-ray approach, which is the balance between spirit and energy, between spiritual and form part of existence. And how do we balance it? By making things technologically that are beautiful, but most importantly, create beauty in all those who experience it. Now, what is the definition of beauty? Beauty is when you use something that's technologically made, I don't care how it's made, artistically made, it improves your senses. It allows you to sense more accurately and more perceptively everything that's going on around you. That's called intelligence. That makes the energy more intelligent. And the highest energies in us, in a physical sense, are our senses. So beauty, it makes our senses beautiful. It improves our senses. When something's ugly, it decreases our senses. It diminishes our senses. And the results are ugliness and destruction and a movement away from God. So we have to work on creating a society that is beautiful, one that helps everybody else experience better sense by using technology, by experiencing every part of the society, from teaching and education to creation to art and science and religion and every form of business imaginable. It has to do all those great things in health and the medical profession. All these things have to come together to make us become more perceptive and our awareness to increase, enhance, to the point where we are much more accurate in what we perceive. This is no small order, and there's lots of ways to do it. I'll try to cover some of them. And this has to be done in conjunction with the economic, technological production plan that I already suggested. Otherwise, we end up in a problem, and the sun cooling off is not going to solve our problem. This is an internal event. Yes, it's going to help to get rid of some of the terrorism, and it'll give us some breathing room. But we can't become more greedy just because there aren't terrorists anymore. We need to use what we have so that all things that are developed in a technological sense improve people in their senses and in their lives. Everything they do has to use less time and less effort each second they do it. And they have to do so with less mistakes, meaning their senses are way better. And that is a total ball of wax for intelligent activity. That's the whole thing that you've got to do to create intelligent activity. Now, that's a conceptual side. What about the practical side? What kinds of things am I trying to talk about? Okay, let's take a look at some things. Some of these are my own pet things. They may not be yours, but that's okay. By the way, I forgot to mention, we have a new number to call in if you're on Skype. I guess you already know that if you're hearing my voice. I don't know what it is, but at some point, I'll find out in the next week, and I'll be able to tell you folks out there. So, yes, you can still listen in on the show. If for some reason you're having trouble, I think that somehow there's some way for you to find out. And I'll find out about that probably later. Okay. How do we improve this? Well, the first is that in the area of entertainment, it's time that we, as a people, seek entertainment that makes us feel closer to our Creator, closer to each other, and improves who and what we are while we're doing the same for others. That means murder movies, movies about monsters that kill us all the time, movies that are only about terrible things and sexually explicit for no darn reason movies, movies that employ the worst kinds of examples of how humans can live and act, need to be avoided. Why should you avoid them? Are you worried about your own senses? Well, they could harm them, but the reason I want you to avoid them is so that you put pressure on the people who make them to say, you know, this isn't, I can't make any money doing this. They're being driven to do it because other people are attracted to it. When you won't support it anymore and you let other people know that you're not going to, you might influence them as well. We can change some of this. Now, do I want everybody to have a Pollyanna viewpoint of the world? No. I'm only suggesting that we have movies that represent some creative, in some creative way, a way of getting back to your Creator without ignoring some of the terrible problems that we face as human beings. That means we may have movies about murder, but we show how that's a terrible thing, and how it can be improved upon with changing the focus of how we make these entertainment outlets. We don't have to be entertained by how many murders we saw on the screen. We can be entertained by how murders are decreased in life and how you can catch people who are murderers and how you can choose to not be a murderer. We can be also entertained by offsetting murder movies. I'm not saying get rid of all of them. I'm going to say change the way they're produced and the storyline so that there are virtuous outcomes in almost every movie of some sort. It doesn't have to be every movie, but it should be most. Right now, the reverse is true, and this is a terrible thing. We're also using other media in very negative ways. This thing with the politics and the sexual exchanging of pictures and crazy stuff, all of that is like pandering the technology to the lowest common denominator of humanity, which is people who have personality disorders and are seeking ways of dealing with fetishes and very seriously disturbed emotional, mental expressions of life. This is what that meant, is that technology's answer for humanity. And if we continue to go down those roads, those technologies will become eventually controlled by government, eventually destroyed by government, and eventually they'll be used to control us. Now, this is a means that we should be able to keep completely open. I'm not saying censor people from doing this. I'm saying let's make it so that it's more friendly and more useful to people who aren't doing those sorts of things, so that it doesn't become the mainstay of why people have a computer and are on the internet. I mean, that just makes sense. Now, of course, we already have, in most countries, outlawed child pornography. Can we do that? Is that a fair thing? So people say, well, shouldn't do that because it's freedom of expression and speech. But you see, the problem is that these people aren't just watching. It's promoting their illness, so the pedophilia then becomes exercised in the real world. And if you have children, you know what I'm saying. And it's a fear everybody has that has children or that concerns themselves with children, that, why should we be increasing the number of pedophilia by having free speech in any way? And so our country has decided not to do that. That's a good thing. Not all countries have followed that way. But it wouldn't matter much if we made it more and more uncomfortable and difficult for people like that to be able to use those sources. And at the same time, the most of us were following a more creative, godly life. Believe it or not, I do believe this, that the people who are following such evil ways will see some element of light if there were enough people emitting it. So if most of us are doing good things, there'll be fewer people doing bad things. Now you can say, oh, that's silly. They're still going to do bad things. So I don't find that to be true. I find that evil and darkness is sort of like, it's like a disease. It grows and it becomes more and more as there are fewer and fewer good people. That's what I find. All right, so how else can we change the world around us while we're making these economic changes, these energy changes in the third ray? Correcting most of the third ray problems if we followed a lot of what I said. But what else can we do? What are the areas that are real problematic? Okay, the areas that are additionally problematic have to do with things like banking and police areas and the way police deal with people and the way we deal with police. And also in areas of, we'll say, military action. So let me kind of cover up. I think we may have somebody on the line. Hello, caller. Are you there?
Hey, yes, hello. Niles?
How are you doing?
Hey, I'm just fine. This is Tommy in Tennessee. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Tommy, is that your name, Tommy?
Yes, got an echo here.
Okay, Tennessee. What did you want to say? Or what did you want to ask? What are your thoughts tonight?
I'm hearing an echo. Do you hear it?
There is an echo. Let's try to work way through it. Maybe they can do something on the other side.
Maybe I'll back off the speaker. Well, it's not helping in here. Okay, well.
There, you sound better now, Tommy. Keep going.
Okay, well, I'm hearing myself, but I do that anyway, so. Anyway, I was catching your line of thinking here, and I wanted to ask you, you know, it's all good at Niles. You've got some thinking going on there, but I wanted to ask you if you're familiar with the Ascension timeline. Are you familiar with it?
No, why don't you tell me about it?
Ascension timeline?
Are you talking about Ascension? Well, go ahead. Tell me the Ascension timeline, Tommy.
Well, I'm not the expert, but it's all out there, and it's just a matter of pulling the information together like anything else, but all the things that you're talking about are problematic, like you're saying, that if we could, you know, lots of people out here like you and have thought about all these changes to make the world a better place, right? That something is prohibiting this better world that we all feel that we could use and need for our beneficial interest and not a nefarious agenda that's been going on for millennia. Well, the Ascension timeline is bringing all the vast multitude of beneficial changes in with it, and it's happening right now. And if you have you heard of NASARA, a new economic common law system? Bill Clinton signed it into law in 1999. It's all ready to go, and it's all happening in the background right now. The only problem with all these 6,000 patents, free energy patents, are about to be released. It's an invisible war with the dark energy that has been controlling the planet. That's on its way out the door, keeping everybody on this prison planet with this tyranny. So that's what the 2012 timeline is about. Is about the transformation of consciousness. That the individual consciousness absolutely must transform from where it currently is, individually and collectively, to raise the frequency just in a place of joy of the individual, while all the fear is being propagated intentionally to raise himself out of the ditch of death, disease, and destruction, so that the inbound energy coming from the sun and all the changes on an energetic level heals all the miscreated discordant energy that we've been dealing with, and it's a momentous occasion. And so everything that you're talking about is absolutely and going to get revamped and better, because there's a deconstruction taking place of the old right now, and there can't be a vacuum to make room for the new and the better, but the news is just not reporting it. But it's a run-up for a transition into the 2012 timeline for full disclosure, when we find out that the truth has been covered up about who we really are and what we came here to do on the planet collectively, that we're galactic beings, part of a galactic civilization, and that all the truth about all the lies will be exposed so that we can have the transparency we need to get all the things done that you'd like to do and that we're talking about here.
Well, Tommy, let me just give you some ideas that I'm thinking about as you talk. First of all, sure. I think it's a good thing to obviously hold that we are headed for a beneficial and improved future. Are we cosmic beings of sort? Well, we come from souls that may have lived in other worlds, may have been in other places. We are an extension of God. And the way to look at this is that, in my opinion, that the more we can live our lives that way, in the here and now, the more we promote it and help others to do the same, the better off we're going to be. I'm talking about some practical things tonight, but there's also a highly, we'll say, hidden or esoteric spiritual part to the process, which I think that you may also be equally or more so interested in. And, of course, there's been many, many times that we've talked about some things that might be related to some of the things you're thinking about. Anyway, I'm glad you gave us a call in, and I want you to keep listening
sure.
to the show.
And like, thanks, for example, with the frequency increase, there's a super wave coming.
Well, listen, I've got to go right now, Tommy, but I want to thank you again for calling in and keep listening. Okay, so let me continue on now, because Tommy's ideas, I'll try to interweave some ideas about this. Of course, 2012... what do you call it, the ascension timeline, or however you want to look at it, it's a change in the way the planet is going to be focusing from a more material side to a more spiritual or a more godly, at least in my opinion, way of balancing things out. God is part of materiality, don't get me wrong, but when it becomes the grossest, the most, we'll say, negative side of existence, then it is not necessarily representing God anymore. It's just there for its own sake sometimes, and sometimes it's there for even darker, nefarious activities. As we move towards a greater balance in spiritual life, it is incumbent upon us to try to change the areas of that life so that we can be co-creating with God. I don't want to just wait around for something to happen. I'm suggesting that we do things and co-participate, because we're not just here as, we'll say, some people think so, but I believe we're not just here to experience or to educate ourselves, to learn. We're here to act. And the action part is a very important part of our universe, and it wouldn't make sense to me that God would create life, which is a means of its own extension to grow itself, in a way in which activity and the life taking its own activity eventually as expressed in human beings wouldn't be a major part of it. So we are responsible, whether we choose to be, that's another issue, but we are responsible for what is taking place in our world now and to a greater extent to some time in the future. So I'm going to suggest that, and I won't be able to go into quite the number of examples I just wanted to do, but I'm going to suggest this. If we were going to want to make some more immediate changes, and let's say in our banking system, and then I'll go to the military, it's about as far as I'm going to be able to go. Our present level of banking is, the premise of the banking system is that the process of using time and energy, which we call money, by a bank, is doled out to people based upon the bank's ability to get its time and energy returned to it with a profit. Well, I think most of you would agree that that is the present model for banking. I'm going to suggest a different one right now. But I hope we're all in agreement that that is the present model. Now, if you don't think it is, then that's another point, and you could argue against what I'm going to say now. But if that's what you agree with, then let me suggest an alternative to that particular model of banking. Now, you know that I support capitalism, so I'm not going to suggest that the government take over banking or that we start giving out loans like Christmas presents to people or something like that. No, I'm not going to suggest that at all. Instead, I'm going to suggest a more proactive form of banking in which the banks are a participant in the process of the time and energy model, and that they encourage the people who borrow from them to be able to become as successful as possible as rapidly as possible. By the greater the levels of profit of the person, the faster the loan is repaid, and the less the bank collects in their benefits of time and energy from those that they are loaning to. Okay, so let me give you a practical model of that so that you can understand it. This is going to sound a little strange at first to people who are in banking particularly, because they're going to say, what? Okay, here's the deal. Let's say I come to you. Well, I'm not probably a good person for this, but let's say I come to you and I say, hey, can I please have $100,000? I want to open up a veggie food stand on the street corner. And they say, oh, okay. Well, let's see how you're going to do that. And we're going to structure our plan this way. We'll give you X amount of dollars to do it. If you want to repay us in this amount of time, or X amount more dollars, you want to repay it in that amount of time. But in either case, the amount of money that we're going to give you is going to be predicated upon the amount of money that you earn back and the amount of money that, that you pay us back within. So if you pay us back quicker, it's going to cost you less for the money. And if you earn more money, you're also going to pay us less for the money. Now, if you're a banker, you're going to say, well, wait a second, how do I make money in this thing? Well, think about it. Bankers are mostly concerned about a thing called risk. And if you're a banker, you know what I'm talking about. This model reduces your risk tremendously because the encouragement of lending the money to the borrower is based upon the borrower's ability to pay it back and in less time, which means that your risk goes down, even though your profit does too. In most cases, the risk represents actual losses over the long term of banking. Therefore, your losses go way down in this model, even though your profits do. And in almost every circumstance, the losses will be, you will reduce the amount of losses at a greater rate than the amount of money that you lose in the repayment. What I'm telling you is the banker makes more money, banks make more money in the model that I'm suggesting than the present model that is used. Now you could say, well, why is that true? And you could think it out and tell you, you'll have to maybe think it out after the show because this is kind of one of these things you got to kind of play it out in your head. But let's say it is true, then you might say, well, why is that true? And how come nobody's doing that? You know, we've been around for a long time. Why are we doing this sort of thing? And the rationale for it is that you have to see it from the esoteric side. Again, this has to do with the sun in a weird way. But it's about energy. And it shows that money is compressed time and energy. What you're really doing here is you are working with God more. You're helping people to be successful more in the way that you're loaning to them because you're structuring the loan in ways in which it benefits them to a great extent to be successful. then I'm going to go further with this model, but I just want to start with where at the very beginning of it so that it makes some sense to you. Now, how much further can you go with this? Well, then you can start educating people. You can bring in the second rank, I call it. You can help them develop a higher consciousness because you want them to be successful. So you not only loan them the money, but if they are willing, not they don't have to, but if they're willing, they'll take your advice and help of whatever you can do to maybe you have consultants who help them as part of the cost of the loan, your cost as a banker, to be successful. It's still them taking the risk. They're still doing the capitalist thing, but you're trying to ensure that they can repay you faster so that, you know, you get your money back quicker. And that's less risk, by the way. And they make a higher profit, which you're going to also reward them for by further reducing the amount that they overall have paid you for in the loan. So, I mean, it's a terrific model. And it works because it gives the banker more creation in the process and allows the banker to do a godly thing, a soul-level thing. That banker is now becoming more like a soul helping another soul rather than just, well, I want my money and I want it yesterday because I'm a banker. I loaned you an umbrella, but only until it rains, so give it back to me. You know, that kind of thing has never been very beneficial for bankers to be in that mentality, and they oftentimes are. So the interesting thing about this whole process is that it will save money, it'll make more money in my belief structure, you need to think it out, and it allows capitalism and the use of money to grow because it'll be more effectively used, faster used, and that means there'll be more capital. And capital is a big deal. Remember, I started doing that before Tommy gave a call. And then talk about that. But so capital becomes a real major issue in how they're using capital in a society such as we have in this particular country. So it's a good model. Now, I want to jump to the military. I realize we're going to have to shift here fairly fast because we're running out of time. But let me talk about this model of materialism. I mean, of militarism. When you have a model as we presently have, which is that the military is a part of the government that is used to protect the safety and rights of the citizens of the country from those mostly outside the country. Otherwise, you call them police. And I wanted to get the police. We're not going to have time tonight to do that. So I'm just going to deal with the military. And so this use of energy now, this is another kind of energy. It's both human energy and it's technological energy. It's coming together and we call it force. We're using force. We're using force against force that supposedly is against us, and it is evil. That's our premise in this country. Although it's not in our Constitution, it should be. That's another thing I would put in there. We talk about the War Powers Act and all this stuff. I think there should be, military itself should be defined as what it is, what it should be, a force against, force for good against darkness and evil. Okay, so what then is the problem? Here's our problem. The use of our military is no longer being determined by a means of protecting us and being against certain forms of evil. Instead, it has more to do with, oftentimes, they use this word, so I'm going to use it, the most important material outcomes that might occur in a particular region of the world, so that we have strategic investments or values that we want to protect. We're not protecting our people anymore. We're protecting strategic values and investments, such as oil. Okay, now, what's wrong with that idea in comparison to what I just said? Well, now we're no different than the people who are taking things away from us. We're fighting over things, right? Well, our things are over there, but they're not here, But they're really not over there. They're just things that we consider strategic to us. We don't exactly own them, but we buy them, or we maybe use them, or we have some leasing right to them, or whatever. And so this is the foundation that our present military is used for. The problem with that model is that sometimes we're no better, therefore, than the people we're fighting, and sometimes we're worse. So we got to get back to the original model, because the original model is to protect us and not the interest quota on the United States, which is just a euphemism for the interests of material gain of some parts and some interests in the United States, usually the corporations, sometimes the people in government, and they're interested in protecting those rights. So that doesn't sound like a very comfortable thing for me, for the use of military. What I suggest is the following, to try to change this man. And that is that we use our military only under the basis, and there has to be proof, that to not do so, it will cost human life in general. The first human life has to be related in some way to the citizens of the United States. So if it will cost human life by us not using our military in other countries, but it saves lives here, we have to be more concerned about here. And I have a reason for this. We are a leading country, and if we only try to save lives in Afghanistan, but at the cost of lives here, including the soldiers that are going over, that can be a negative. So we have to be careful that we are not looking at this from a truly altruistic attitude, because the world presently doesn't function that way. Yes, if they function in reciprocity that way with us, I would say, hey, let's go for it. Get them one for all for one. I'm for that. But that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about that our military needs to be first and foremost to protect the safety and lives of the citizens of our military. Now, what does it count if we're going over to another country and we're killing people needlessly and it's costing their lives and it's not doing anything for our lives? That would make no sense. And sometimes we do things like that that make no sense. And then we say we're doing it for strategic reasons, that it always has to do with things. Sometimes it has to do with other weird ideas. Now, I know this is a touchy subject because, in the military, some people say, well, anything we do in the military is good. I don't think that's always true. I think we have to be extremely careful because force has to be done with justice, or sometimes, as some people would say, judiciously. Justice means, and judicial means, that you are using wisdom, reason, and love in your thinking process, not just, well, we've got oil to be concerned about, and we got to get our oil, and so we'll send our military. Not good. Not a good thing. Now, we're running out of time, and I'm quite concerned that I'm not going to cover the subject well enough, so I'm going to get some emails and stuff from people who didn't understand what I'm exactly saying. The most important thing is that when you use force, and you're using it against anything, that you know that what you're using it against is some true darkness, that darkness is going to impact your people in some way, or if it isn't going to impact your people in some way, you're using it then totally for the benefit of others, but your people are not going to suffer or die because of it. When I say suffer or die, I'm not talking about the few people who go over there and may lose their lives. I'm talking about the whole country in general could fail. So you have to remain a leading force in the world if you're going to be acting on behalf of the world. So I wanted to make sure that I'm not confusing people what I'm saying here. But again, you can't do things that weakens us to the point where we could be easily taken over because we used up all of our military assets and forces going after either things and oil or trying to save people who don't care about being saved or don't even want us there. There are lots of issues here that we have to be careful about. Now, should we go fight for a corrupt and terrible government? who refuses to change, and I don't think so. I think we should fight for people who are self-righteous and have their own belief structure about right and wrong that is close enough to ours to say that they are equivalent in moral character to who we are. So that's my thought about that, too. And I'm not talking just about Afghanistan. Maybe a lot of people think I mentioned that name. I'm not. I think Afghanistan is a whole other complex problem I don't have time to talk about tonight. But at any rate, we are running out of time here. And I do want you to think about some of the things that I've said tonight. And how it all fits in with the sun is that as with this sun, if it keeps cooling off, we have an opportunity we may not have again for who knows ever. It may be this is the turning point. Maybe Tommy's right. This is the real test of us. This is the time when we have to really take the reins and say to ourselves that we're going to make this place as good a place as we can, and we're going to do it here and now. We've got the opportunity, but the sun's getting cool, and that means we've got some time, and we've got some energy, so let's do it right. Okay, well, we're out of time for right now, and until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.
Just a boy waiting for a girl like you.